Just a couple of quick notes here. John, please don't use my name. I've been at Gibson's for 24 years. Last year, I made six figures. I average with tip and wage between $400 and $600 a night. Yeah, if you make $500 a night, on average, say, and you only work four nights a week, that's $100,000 right there. John, I bartend at O'Hare. We are charged 15% of our sales. If a customer does not tip, we lose money. Hey, John, when I get a bonus at my job, it's for doing a good job for my talent. They tax that. Why should service people not pay taxes on their tips? Okay, just some more comments as we talked about. Both Donald Trump and Kamala Harris say they want to give you a tax break on your tips if you are a tipped employee. Here is Terry Savage joining us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Hi, Terry.
Hello, John. That's an interesting conversation. Yeah. Very interesting, both sides of that.
Yeah, I know. I'm so easy. I see it both ways. I'm a middle child. but at the end of the day, I think tips are income. Tips are income, and that needs to be taxed. But I have sympathy for people who do jobs I don't want to do that are the kinds of jobs that people do traditionally get tipped for. And if it's a gift, if I'm just saying, but I like you, you're a nice person, then what business is it of the government's to stick their hand in that transaction?
I fall in the latter category. I didn't hear the whole discussion, but I fall in the latter. And in fact, I make it a point to, even when I'm charging payment for a service, if there's a tip involved, to try to tip in cash and let the person who's receiving the tip make the decision about reporting it.
Terry, what's going on with the markets today? They aren't jumping
nothing,
up and down.
Nothing's going on. You've probably talked ad nauseum in the news reports about the inflation numbers. Okay, everything's under control with the CPI. We are now year over year under 3%. That is not the Fed's 2% or even 2.5%, but it shows we're going in the right direction. And now the market debate, you know, when you think about the history of the market trying to second guess the Fed, at our annual Executives Club January economic forecast, the participants ranged in from, there'll be five cuts this year.
Yeah.
I think someone said there could be eight cuts this year. Will it start in March? Oh, it'll start in March. No, they'll wait till June. And here we are now. And instead of, will it be in September or will it be before the election? The market is saying it will be in September. And the only question is a quarter or a half a point. And given the fact that everybody's been so wrong for so long, there's no point in speculating. But that's what the market's trying to figure out.
I hear you. And now I'm about to speculate. I think that the market will be disappointed if it's a quarter point and they've already baked in 25 basis points. I think it'll be 50.
Okay, you pay your money and you take your choices. Yeah. But that's not what I think is most critical here. I'm just very aware of the market and its presence as a political statement. So what I am praying for is the market to stay relatively level at this point. Remember when I talked about the fact that historical statement that 87% of the presidential election if the market goes up, the incumbent party retains the presidency.
Over the 3 months leading up to the election.
Over the 3 months from August, September, and October, the 3 months leading up to the election. So I'm just kind of very aware. We know the market can be volatile. We saw immediately that a decline and potentially an increase could lead to all kinds of political statements. I would hope the market stays out of it, and election decisions are not based on the emotions of the stock market.
Well, I'd like to think that metric didn't even matter, but there it is. They say 87% of the time, if you draw two dots starting from August to voting day, if that line goes up, the party in power stays in power in the White House. And if it goes down, you get a new president. That's a hell of a metric.
If that goes over just a history of election years of over 80 years. So that's why I'm just kind of holding my breath. And so should everyone else. But however, it was just a little over a week ago that we had the scare of the decade, I think, with that huge Monday collapse in the market in the sense that where would the bottom be? So you have two choices now. You could say, ha, see, Myrtle, I told you we didn't have to do anything. Or you can say, honey, that was so scary. I almost had a heart attack. We need to get some trusted advice and see not only what we own? Do we know what kind of funds we really own? Is that target date plan really protecting us now that we're retired? Should we be talking about some of the issues that we have in front of us? Like, how much are we going to withdraw? What happens to our standard of living? What if we live longer than the averages on which most financial planning is based? What if we live longer? Whether you're in your 40s and thinking ahead to one day we'll need to know this, or you're 65 thinking, should I take Social Security early or wait till 67, or could we wait till 70? Those are decisions that are hard to make alone. I know how to help you make them alone, but I think a relatively few people will actually go through that process on their own. And the financial services industry is geared up like, you know, we will help you. We will help you. We have the solution. We'll guarantee you X percent on annuity. We'll tell you what to do. Or you can retire and you'll have plenty of money. Most of that planning is a bunch of PR malarkey. And you need to find someone who's not interested in their commissions or their fees, which is how those commercials get paid for in those big office buildings, but someone who really knows his or her business about planning and will work with you with your best interests in mind. That's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
Finding you, getting you in touch with those people.
And that's what you wrote about, too, in your latest column, Finding Trusted Financial Advice. Terry Savage joins us today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Wednesday. By the way, Terry, just a moment ago, you were talking about finding a trusted fiduciary advisor. If I am using somebody who does charge a percent, what I wonder is a reasonable load to expect them to... You don't like that question, do you?
No, because it depends. And let me start over. I am very proud of the column I just posted because it is directed at all of you who are listening. You have so many questions, just like the one John asked. I get posts on my blog, Terry, we're 63 and 61. We have X hundred thousand dollars in our 401k and our mortgage is paid off, or our mortgage will be paid off. Do you think we can retire now? I would love to wave a magic wand and give you an answer, but the fact is that all of those important answers that change your life require a huge universe of things to be considered. It's not just, should I sell my tech stocks, or should I get out of my stocks and buy or have more chicken money? This is about how will you live at least till the average age, but perhaps well beyond that, because you know you're above average, you're our listeners. So what you need is someone who will do a comprehensive financial plan. There are tax considerations. Should you do a Roth conversion? Should you pay the taxes now and then you won't have to take distributions later? So the planner needs to work with your accountant. There's a whole estate tax question. Maybe you're going to have money left over. Wouldn't that be nice? How do you want to pass it on to your children? But even more importantly, how do you want to pass it on to your spouse if something happens to you? And what kind of income can you reasonably expect to take? Not betting on the market to give you a 10% return. That's pretty risky exposure. But taking the appropriate risk in your investments. So what kind of income could you get, inflation adjusted, to make your money last as long as you do? So when you say to me, what should it cost? You know, I'll talk about percentages, but part of the percentage depends on, number one, are they only handling investment advice for your assets under management? Then that, and no commissions, no hidden fees going back to the broker, anywhere, depending on the size of your account, from a half of 1% to 1%, nothing more. Could you do that on your own for less than 10 basis points, you know, 1/10, 1/100th of a percent? Sure, you could do your own investments at Fidelity or Vanguard for next to nothing. So if it's just investments, but what about the time a planner spends with you going over all these issues, your taxes, your children, the child that's married to someone you hate and you hope that your daughter doesn't inherit this because then, they'll, you know, when they split up, or the kid that's not competent to manage his own money even at age 32. These are all kinds of decisions you work on with a financial planner. So depending on how, not only the size of your assets, But the complexity of the issues and the work that needs to be done, a planner may work with your estate planner, your accountant, so those fees would be separate, or they may have their own in-house team if you don't have one. So it all depends. What I've tried to do, I hope this goes without saying, you all know me, there's nothing in this for me, but a woman who has now become my dear friend, Pam Kruger, created wealthramp.com. There's a link at the homepage of terrysavage.com on top. It says, find your trusted advisor. She believes, as I do, that people need to have fee-only fiduciary advisors. She created a matching system. Wealthramp.com is like match.com for advisors she has carefully vetted. There are a bunch of them in the Chicago area. I know many of them. They're who I would direct you to, but I don't make individual recommendations. Instead, I send you to WealthRamp. And there you talk with Pam. You fill out a questionnaire, yes. But Pam, personally, she does this. Matches you with the advisor. I get nothing out of this. Your fees are not higher from the advisor. Pam gets, I think, a tiny remuneration from your first year's fee. But she's not in it for that either.
Yeah.
The whole point is to get you with someone. It's not just about trust, but you better start with someone you trust who discloses the costs, and the first meeting should be free. So when you sit down, you come prepared. Yeah, we already have an estate plan. No, we don't. We need that. And here's what we have. And here's a list. And then the planner will say, okay, here's what we think we can do for you. And here's what it'll cost annually or for the first part of it when we set it up. And then here's what you'll get every year after going forward. That's how you do it competently. But you have to start with someone that is really on your side to begin with.
I understand that, and that makes perfect sense. I will say the value to me, and maybe it's this fiduciary person, or maybe it's somebody with one of those agencies where they have the pretty shiny buildings, is that oftentimes they will, you need a third party in your financial world. You need somebody to discipline you or remind you that you're below the amount of savings or investing that you need to be to retire someday. You need somebody else in your ear pushing you or pulling you in the right direction. Wherever you get that advice, I think that's, I just want to put that out there in the universe.
I think that's key. That it absolutely, it's key that you find someone that you know you can trust and whom you respect and whom you get along with. And you'll determine that if you have a meeting with one or a couple of them before you make a choice. And yes, you want someone that you can rely on. And lots of times the professional will say, you shouldn't be doing this, or you have to wait to do that.
Yeah.
But you have to work together with someone that you know is already starting on your side. The cost, believe me, if they save you from one mistake, a mistake like taking Social Security too soon, or having your asset allocation in your rollover all wrong.
Yeah.
If they save you from one mistake, the cost of a financial planner will pay for itself many times over the rest of your lifetime.
That's Terry Savage. Okay, we've got questions for Terry, 312-981-7200. Some questions for you from our listeners. Anything you want to say before I pick up a few texts?
Well, you asked me
about
this whole thing of having your RMD in cash.
Yep,
for so
2024 and 2025.
Okay, so my mind is on that. Now, let me just say a couple of things. You already know what your 2024 RMD is. You knew it by the end of January when you got your year-end statement. If you have three IRAs, you have to add them all together. And then you have to go online, just Google RMD calculator and put in, I have $482,912 in my combined IRAs. When you put in your age and your gender, and it will tell you what your RMD is. You could do that last January.
The amount of money you have to take out.
Your required minimum distribution, which starts the year you turn age 73. A couple of you are going to nitpick and say, well, the first year I could wait till the April 15th of the next year. Do it the first year, the year you turn 73. Now, you already know that amount. Then comes the question, okay, whatever it is, 42,512, 17,852, whatever it is based on. By the way, if you have a 401k left over at work, you must take a separate RMD from that 401k, the RMD calculated based only on that balance. But the other ones, you can take them out of any one account or a couple of accounts, but you knew in January, end of January, what your balances were at year end, and you could calculate very simply, or any of your custodians at Fidelity or Merrill or wherever would calculate what your total RMD is if you give them all the account balances at year end. So then you were faced with a choice back then. Would you like to get, you know, a check every month on the 10th of the month? Divide it in 12 parts. Be sure to have them take out taxes. Take out at least 20% in income taxes, more if you're still working and you might be in a higher tax bracket. So ask your accountant.
Wait, do you pay tax on the RMD?
Oh, yeah. Everything that comes out of your retirement account is going to be taxed as ordinary income. Okay. So you could have taken it out monthly. You could have said, I'll just keep it in cash and I'll take it out in October. It'll be like a great present. Or you could have left it in your mutual funds, your stock funds. I do not believe in speculating with short-term money. And RMD, the distribution, the amount that I know I have to take this year, I want to have that in cash. And if you're a little bit concerned about the market, you don't want to be market timing for your RMD and be forced to sell. So my personal thing is that I have next year's RMD in cash already as well. It doesn't bother me because I always have a lot of chicken money in my retirement account at this point in my life. The whole point of having your RMD in cash is you're not worried, oh my gosh, I have to sell my Apple stock and it went down last week. So you raise the cash. Now, one final warning on your RMD, because we're getting to that time. It's so easy to procrastinate. Do not procrastinate past November 1st, because every mutual fund company is going to be very busy. And you want them to get your paperwork done. It doesn't matter. You're not going to earn a lot more if you kept it in the stock market. Maybe the market will double between the election day and the year end. And you'll say, why did I have it in cash? But really, this is not the speculation you want to be doing. If you want to be invested in the market, keep the vast majority of your IRA invested, but keep your RMD in cash and take it out during October. And then one more thing, I'll preempt this. Everybody says, but I don't need my RMD. Good for you. You're still working. You have other income, other assets. Then go buy treasury bills, or you can go buy a mutual fund. But you remember, you have to pay taxes on that amount, so keep some for taxes.
And even if you don't need the money, you still have to.
You must take it. Exactly.
Thanks to Terry's advice, we used Pam Kruger's service to find a new financial advisor. Had many quality conversations with Pam, and she guided us to great advisor and has given us great peace of mind. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Pam. Somebody
Amen.
Else said, does Terry have an opinion of an online brokerage firm called Tasty Trade? It has a good bonus for new accounts. I'm trying to convince myself not to be too skeptical due to the unconventional name Tasty Trade.
Oh, yeah. They're a Chicago legend. That's Tom Sosnoff. This is, first of all, this is a firm for traders primarily. Okay. I mean, all of you who are saying, well, should I go to Tasty Trade? I'm at Fidelity. You don't have to go to Tasty Trade. This is a wonderful, safe, amazing brokerage firm. And if you should just Google Tom Sosnoff, who founded Tasty Trade. I know it's a crazy name. It always reminds me of a Hostess Cupcake or something like that.
Right.
But basically, this firm gives great advice for traders, for option traders, sophisticated traders and active traders, low commissions. So if that's what you want to do with an account, yeah, I'd highly recommend them.
Terry is so right about a trusted advisor. My husband died at the age of 57. My financial advisor walked with me for a year after his death, helping me figure out what to do. Now is the time to find someone you trust before disaster strikes. Hi, Terry. Should I wait for the December capital gains distribution in my inheritance IRA before taking the AMD? Thank you for your help. I presume they mean the RMD.
RMD, yeah. No, you should not wait, because when they distribute the cap, no. All the money coming out of any IRA is going to be taxed as ordinary income, even your inherited IRA. And the share price is reduced by the amount of the distribution. Basically, you have no, it doesn't matter to you at all. Get the distribution done. Do not wait till even Thanksgiving. Really get it done early November.
Terry, I took Social Security early. My wife is waiting till she's 70. I told her it doesn't matter because the spousal will only be one half. She can start collecting. I'm the primary. Is that correct?
No. Where did you get everything so upside down? First of all, but where shall I start here? I don't know who's going to get the larger benefit, but your wife should wait at least until her full retirement age. You will collect a spousal benefit, only a spousal, not a widow or widower's benefit. You will only collect half of her benefit at her full retirement age, but she will collect a much larger benefit on her own account if she waits till age 70. Now, I don't know who's who, who's the big earner, okay? You will get half of her benefit or yours, whichever is larger. I think you said you took it early. That was silly also. Nobody should take Social Security early, unless it's an absolute emergency. I can't fix this for you because I don't know what your different values of your benefits are, but you can fix it easily. Go to MaximizeMySocialSecurity.com, put in the information, both of your accounts, both of your Social Security numbers, and it will spit out for you the best way to maximize the benefit for each of you and both of you. And by the way, though, if you became a widower, if you wait till 70, you get the other person's benefit that they were receiving at death. But if you're just getting a spousal benefit, it's only half the benefit at their full retirement age, unless you started taking yours early, in which case it's reduced. Only if that half is larger than what your benefit would be.
Okay, Terry's ready to take more of your questions. 312-981-7200. Terry, I'll start with this question when we come back after a short break. John and Terry, is a T-bill still the best option to park money and earn interest until the money is due? 312-981-7200 if you've got a question for Terry Savage as well. We've got more business news right now, though. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Northwestern Medicine is expanding in the northwest suburbs. The health system has announced plans to build a new outpatient center in Huntley. It'll be located on Northwestern Medicine's Huntley Hospital campus. The $96 million project will feature space for cancer and cardiac care. The Illinois Health Facilities Board must approve the project before construction can begin. Northwestern hopes to begin building in October with opening set for 2027. A pedestrian walkway will connect the new outpatient center to the hospital. Chicago-based Molson Coors is selling four of its craft beer breweries to Tilray Brands. The New York company is acquiring Atwater Brewery, Revolver Brewery, Terrapin Beer Company, and Hop Valley Brewing Company. Atwater is best known in the Midwest with its Dirty Blonde American Pale Ale. Tilray got its start as a cannabis company, but has been diversifying beyond those products into beer. Last year, it bought 8 beer and beverage brands from Anheuser-Busch InBev. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, this is Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And one of the fun things to do this time of year is take a drive in the country and look at how tall the corn is growing and how the crop looks from your windshield. Now, this guy's been out there, and?
I think it's pretty remarkably good shape at this point.
And he's an expert. More from him and an update on the corn and soybean crops after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There has never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox, and there's never been a better time to jump in your Silverado and cruise the corn and soybean fields around Illinois. That's what Emerson Nofziger did. Well, I don't know for sure he was driving his Silverado, but he's an emeritus extension agronomist at the University of Illinois, and he says the early August corn and beans look really good.
Well, our eyes certainly tell us that as we drive around. You know, I talk about this thick blanket of green that's on top of every field, and that's just the way it looks. That's particularly the case with soybeans as well, which have really taken on a nice dark green color.
And his eyes bear out what the official USDA numbers are showing. Here's Mark Schleusner, the Illinois state statistician.
69% of corn acres have reached the dough stage compared to 63 normally.
Which is where the liquid inside the kernels is becoming doughy.
18% of corn acres have reached the dent stage compared to 10 normally.
Schleusner says 77% of the Illinois corn crop is rated good to excellent. As for soybeans,
94% of soybean acres are now blooming compared to 91% for the five-year average. 84% of acres are setting pods compared to 69 normally.
Mandy says 72% of the soybean crop is rated excellent. Meanwhile, corn is in the threes, beans are in the nines. Ouch. And one more thing, if you're out there driving around looking at the crops, It can be dangerous. The corn is tall enough now that when you come up to an intersection where there are no stop signs in any direction, you may not see traffic coming until it's too late.
Let's be particularly careful out there.
From the dairy farm to your belly, today's National Creamsicle Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
The Money Lady is ready. Terry, do you want to start with that question I asked before the break?
Yeah, about Treasury bills. The safest place ever always to park your money is T-bills. And if you go to terrysavage.com, right there on the homepage, there's a box, how to buy Treasury bills. 6-month T-bills at this moment are yielding 4.96%, a little under 5%. A couple of months ago, they were yielding 5.5%. Now, look, the auctions every Monday as we refinance our federal debt include 3- and 6-month Treasury bills, billions of dollars. You don't know what the rate will be, but whatever the huge global institutions that run to the treasuries as the safest place in the world, whatever rate they set, that's the rate you get. Yeah. I'd like to point out, I was just looking at a chart in the break, that from about 2009 to about 2017, the yield on 6-month T-bills was well under 1%. In fact, I remember asking Fed Chairman Powell at an event that I was asked at and allowed to ask questions, do you think interest rates will go negative on T-bills? In other words, we'll be paying you to keep our money safe. When the world gets scared or the economies slow down and there's no inflation, we were looking back then at deflation, huge recession, interest rates drop. So T-bill rates have started to drop. If the Fed cuts rates as expected, T-bill rates will drop more. 6-month bills just under 5% today. So they certainly could go lower. But you roll them over automatically, you spread out the purchases, and as the next auction comes up, you get what the going rate is. If you just learned about T-bills in the last year or two since I've been saying, here's how to buy them, go do this, then you might be lulled into feeling that rates always have to be over 5%. That's not the case. But if inflation comes down and interest rates come down, these rates will come down, but you won't lose your money, chicken money.
Okay, Terry, let's take some phone calls. We'll start with Jack. You're on WGN. Go ahead, Jack. What can we do for you?
Well, I was told that I'm on Social Security, that I could actually quit Social Security and go back to work. And if you do that and then you go back to get Social Security again in the future, you get it at the rate of your age. Is that true or false?
Jack, how long have you been on Social Security and how old are you?
I'm 79, and I've been on Social Security probably for about 7 years.
Good for you. Well, you should be on it for at least nine years, because you never can get more than you get at age 70. If in fact, you're 62 or 3 or 4, and you say, oh, I need the money, I'm going to take Social Security, and then you get another job, you have within 1 year to pay back everything you got and then wait and delay till your full retirement age of 67-ish, or even to 70. But once you started taking it, I hope you're enjoying your check. No going back now.
Fred, you're on WGN with Terry Savage. What can we do for you?
Yes, Terry and John, I've been talking a long time. My wife passed away 2 years ago. She was 79, and I didn't know if I have any benefits coming from her Social Security.
It depends. Did she earn more than you? Was she the high earner in your family during your lifetime?
No, she was definitely not.
Okay, then there is no extra money that you will get from her benefit. You would only get some of her. You would only get her benefit to the extent that it was greater than yours. So, sorry, but no extra money, even though she paid in all her lifetime.
Wow. Okay. Sorry to hear that. Hey, Terry, I'm retired at 74 and I manage my own investments. I have a $6 million portfolio, but I only keep 20% in stocks. I feel like I missed the boat being conservative. Should I increase my stock exposure?
Well, I think you've done a great job. And if you will read the column that's posted, something I didn't get into because I'll write another column about it, but designed for people like you who have significant amount of assets and are willing to take control, my next column, and it might not appear for a week or two, is called Maxify Planner, the best planning tool. I don't know what you should do because I don't know who's depending on you and what your lifestyle is, but this is a time, it's never too late to get a financial planner to help you. And just put it this way, you may have lost some opportunity costs, but you have all your money And I hope you're enjoying it right now. $6 million is probably more than you could spend. Don't get married if you're not.
Well,
that's my best financial advice at this stage.
At 20%, I don't think there'd be any harm in going 35%, but I
I can't make that out of the blue.
I can't.
That's why you either need a financial advisor or go read that column, because near the bottom is a service that I will explain why it is so much better than any other planning service on the web.
Hey, Terry,
aren't
RMDs tax-free in Illinois? There are plenty of there's a lot of retirement income that is tax-free in Illinois.
There
right?
is. You know what? That's a really good question. I don't want to speak out of turn. All your retirement benefits
yep.
are tax-free in Illinois. But I just want to double check. Post that on my Ask Terry blog. It'll force me to look. I think so, but I want to make sure.
Either way, we'll answer that next week for sure. And I think to the people that are vacating to Florida because of income taxes should remember that. It's 12:57. Oh, heck, we're out of time, Terry.
Next week, I hope to be standing there right next to you.
Okay. And we have the list of questions that were texted in. Sorry we didn't get to all of your calls. We'll pick it up here next Wednesday. Thank you, Terry Savage.
Oh, John, before you go,
yes.
All retirement income is tax exempt in Illinois. So, yes, your RMD is.
Okay. That and more questions answered next week.